out on your Catholic Church several times. When you did that on one occasion, you turned to Buddhism. How serious were you about that?
Buddhism made sense to me because Buddhism says, sort of the sort of stark Buddhism, Vipassana, that this is the life. This is why we're born. We're born to be here. There is nothing beyond it. There may be. There was something before it, but we're born to be here. This is the purpose of life. Life's purpose is life. Whereas a religious person would say, particularly a Catholic, Christian, life's purpose is to serve and love God. A Buddhist says this life is the purpose. And that made a lot of sense to me.
A Catholic would also say, and I want to ask you about that now, you believe in the intervention of Christ in history, Son of God, resurrection, bodily resurrection, which transforms history and looks to the life eternal. How much of that do you now embrace?
I suppose I've always been very comfortable with my own relationship with this. You know, when I die and there's some old white man standing there with sandals and long hair and a beard and saying, yeah, you made a mistake. I'll say, okay, fine. You know, I made a mistake. I'll go where I take my punishment. I'm interested in the fact that it was such an event, the birth of this deity or this God or this man, that there must be something to it. And so I'm interested in that. I'm interested in the understanding and the pursuit of this person who is an historical figure, who did live, how this person became the pivotal moment in the evolution of humankind and of life. That fascinates me. There is something that is divine, in quotes, about that.
In relating to it directly, as you say that you do, and not being fearful of being judged, does this mean that you do look to life after death, that you feel yourself as part of a continuum towards eternal life?
After I die, I don't have any control over what's going to happen. I don't think about that, honestly. I think there is an aspect of the divine that is not possible to contemplate. It really isn't. And I think that the beauty of that, I think something quite beautiful about the fact that there's something our great, great human minds cannot contemplate. I know this is true because if you look at the history of our species, and this is what's so wonderful about being at the museum, being a part of it, you can see us, we great apes, we Homo sapiens sapiens. We stand up on our 2 feet and then we look up at the sky. Now, that act of looking up to the sky, to me, is what's beautiful. It's what takes us past our other fellow species who we must love and protect, but it takes us past them to a certain extent. And I get really perplexed by atheists and humanists who don't want to look at that moment when we apes stood up and looked up, when we sort of thought, what's beyond this thing, this cave, that search is the divinity of us. And if it also embodies a deity, so what?
Given that very secure sense you have of your relationship to your faith, following Christ's life and death and resurrection came the church, 2,000 years of doctrine and ruling. Now, how does the feminist in you deal with a celibate clergy, which is really quite tough on women?
Celibacy is a very beautiful discipline. It is not natural, it's not normal, but it's quite beautiful because it takes that the sexual urge and the drive, which is natural, and transmits it into serving people. And the transmission of it and the movement of the transition of it is a great power in itself. It contains within itself a great power. And the fact that a man and a woman forgoes the natural, normal thing of wanting your own children, of wanting your own partner, your own lover, your body taken care of, takes that human emotion and transmutes it into serving other people, helping other people, is an incredibly noble thing.
What about the feminist in you, though, accepting the ruling of an all-male priesthood?
Oh, I don't buy that. Absolutely don't.
You don't want
Oh,
it.
No.
You want women priests.
The first thing that you learn as a Catholic child, maybe they still do it, you learn a catechism. We were taught that we were made in the likeness of God, and God is perfect. Does that make any sense? So I wait the day that people realize that Jesus appeared to Mary Magdalene for a reason, and that it will happen.
How does that put you at odds, does it, with your church, with your observation of the faith?
There's so many other things to do in the world. I used to, when I was younger, think about barging into the, you know, the consistent, you know, and started screaming. But it's a waste of time, really. It will happen. It will happen.
You are busy in the rest of the world, and you came and settled in the late 80s in Britain. You found there, I think, probably quite a vibrant black theatre world going forward. Outstanding writers coming along, and you join them. How do you feel that has grown, black consciousness in this country?
I didn't realise at the time that I walked into a recession because I was a young person. I didn't know. Because being an artist, you don't have any money anyway. So I didn't know. Black theaters, you know, we say in America, black people are the last to be hired, first to be fired. And black theater was fired. British theater is much better than American theater. And I can say that even now. But it was killed. And
has it revived? Quite a number of distinguished black writers.
Yes. They're a new generation, and they've got new voices, and they have found their way within this climate. I grew up in a theater where it was activist, it was radical, it was avant-garde, it was confrontational, it was a mélange, it was European, it was American, it was British, and that was completely sort of wiped out.
You took on board the challenge of appearing on BBC's Question Time when the BNP leader, Nick Griffin, was going to appear. There was a great deal of anxiety about his status there and his influence. How did you feel about it?
You know, a lot of people ask me, especially a lot of black people ask me, why do you think they asked you to do it? I've never asked them. They've never told me Question Time, so I have no idea. But I think at the end of the day, the only thing I could bring to the table was myself. I didn't have a history in this country. I don't have an African or Caribbean background. I didn't have anything. I had nothing. So I could
You
just,
had your color.
Yes, but that's a part of me. It's not outside of me. So I just could only bring myself. And it was clear within 5 minutes of being there that he was out of his depth. I was quite shocked.
Let's talk now about the role you have at the British Museum. Are museums moral institutions? What's their moral guideline?
If you use the word moral, I would say, and I believe we are moral in a secular sense. Our moral responsibility is to make sure everybody can get there for free. You don't have to pay to come into the museum.
I was thinking more in terms of, you read history at university, you've been concerned with the narrative of black people ever since. And I wonder about the narrative that you find in museum life and the insight that gives you, or the sympathy it shows, to what you think should be the black narrative.
There, history is a continuum, and it's changed rapidly even in our lifetimes. We've seen huge change. I see now, for instance, the artifacts that we have at the museum as being part of a continuing story of the diaspora, not only the continent of Africa, but also the diaspora in the Caribbean, the United States, South America, Europe, Britain.
Do they tell now the post-colonial story for black people?
They absolutely do, because, first of all, there's no such thing as African art. I don't even know what that is. It's art from different nations and arts from different people. But what you learn, particularly for me, from the art of West Africa, first of all, it's not art. It is the living embodiment of the spirit of the people. And that spirit changes, which is what black music is about, what jazz is about, what the religion is about. The material is not what they're about. It's the spirit that they house. And we share the spirit.
And you right now, you live in Britain, you've married Britain, you've married a white man. Do you feel that you've embraced your culture, the culture you find here, and become part of it?
I'm kind of a nomad. I've lost bits, huge chunks of my Americanness, not the essential stuff, but there's stuff you don't have anymore. And I'm a Londoner. You know, London is an international city. I'm not English. I have a British passport, but I'm not really British. I'm a Londoner.
Where are you now, Bonnie, in terms of your Catholic faith from day to day in your own heart? How do you place yourself?
I go to Mass every Sunday, partly because I'm at this point in my life where I want to get to the space where I was as a child, where you accepted it. It's nice to have 1 hour out of the week where you're just there. That's beautiful. I was very proud when the Pope came. I was proud to see all the Catholics come out of the woodwork. I was proud of him, even though Benedict was head of what used to be called the Inquisition, and he's a really hard guy, very bright guy. But I was proud the way he conducted himself. And I was very touched by English Catholicism, very touched by it, because it's quite tentative and gentle and delicate because of all the persecution it's gone through. So I'm very moved by English Catholicism, very interested in it.
Bonnie Greer, thank you.
Thank you.
Bonnie Greer in conversation with Joan Bakewell in the current series of Belief. You can hear this and all of the week's other programmes again by going to the Radio 3 website, bbc.co.uk/Radio 3. The producer in Manchester was Dawn Bryan. From the 1582 collection Pie Canciones, Gaudete, sung by the 16, conducted by Harry Christophers. This is BBC Radio 3 at 13 minutes past 9. A little later than advertised now, we're going to see out the last night of the old year with the last night of the proms, another chance to hear the concert given in September at the Royal Albert Hall and presented by Sean Rafferty.
And a very good evening to you all. Thank you for being with us for what promises to be a memorable night as usual. Welcome to the last night of the proms 2010, the end of a phenomenal season, more people than ever coming to the concerts, listening on Radio 3, watching on BBC television. As it's the last night, well, of course, it's a party, so expect whistles, roof-raising singing, general mayhem, and a touch of bad behaviour in the second half. We'll have all the favourites, Rule Britannia, Elgar Pomp and Circumstance, Jerusalem, of course. But we have starry soloists to bring some rapturous hush to this mighty hall, which is crammed to the ceiling, balloons going off, flags of every nation fluttering bravely. We have René Fleming singing like an angel in rehearsals, and Maxim Rysanov, who was playing like a dream, so we're in safe hands. Speaking of which, the lovely Susie Klein will be joining me shortly. At the moment, she's down in the dementia. There's the arena with those dedicated people who queue night after night and stand for their music. So, Susie, you're somewhere in the promers. I can't see you.
I am. I'm here at the best seats in the house, although sitting has very little to do with what's going on. Already some bad behaviour here, but we're keeping an eye on it. I am with Susan and Stuart. You two have managed to get the very best position. You're in the middle of the front row of the arena. How did you do it, Stuart?
Well, we came down on Thursday evening, stayed the night, and we got in the queue about 5:30 on the Friday morning. Yeah, so we've been queuing since Friday morning.
Not the most glamorous way of getting here, but the two of you have scrubbed up rather nicely, I have to say. You're looking great.
Thank you very much. It is hard work, but yes, it is hard work.
Tell me something. How do you get the coveted place?
Well, it's not so much as a coveted place. At the end of the day, we came down, as I say, on Thursday evening, and we've queued since Friday morning, since the early hours. And, you know, we've not left the queue. We've stayed here. And at the end of the day, you know, we've been lucky enough to find ourselves where we are.
Great to meet you. Have a fantastic evening, both of you. Thanks very much indeed. Back to you, Sean.
Thanks, Susie. Well, I think you better get out of the way, otherwise you'll be killed in the crush. Susie will be back up in the box in a minute. The BBC Symphony Orchestra, of course, is in place, as always on the last night, and here is the leader, Stephen Bryant, just coming on, all with their marvellous carnations, which we all have thanks to the promos, so thank you very much indeed. Pink and red are the colours I see this year. BBC Symphony Orchestra, of course, the backbone of this great institution, though we have had sensational visits from orchestras all over the world as well. And a hush for the principal conductor of the BBC Symphony Orchestra, his second last night, or rather the second time he's conducted the last night, Jerzy Bieloklawek. And it's Jonathan Dove is the first piece, chosen, he says, something in praise of music and the power of song. So it's a Song of Joy, the BBC commission, and it's a setting of Walt Whitman.
Thank you.
Jonathan Dove's A Song of Joys, BBC Commission opening the last night of this year's Proms. That's the world premiere. And of course, joining the BBC Symphony Orchestra, the BBC Symphony Chorus, and the BBC Singers, all under the baton of the man in charge tonight, Jerzy Bielak-Plavac. And here comes Jonathan Dove sprinting lively down onto the platform to take his bow. Very youthful composer, done so much community work in the best possible sense, involving lots of people making music. Real joyous sound to that setting of Walt Whitman tonight. Just the first nine lines of Whitman's great poem, A Song of Joy, celebrating all mankind and all of nature. As Susie climbs back in the box, you managed to get up through that heaving throng.
I did. And what an opening tonight. I have to say, that was just the perfect curtain raiser. It needs to have bells and whistles on it. It needs
Doesn't
to be
it?
An explosion of how fabulous music is, how much it enriches all of us. And that did exactly that for me.
Yes, I hope everyone was just felt the tremor too of the mighty Royal Albert Hall organ, which is very much in evidence tonight. A few years ago, primed, cleaned, brought back to its absolute glory.
I always wonder what seismologists would make of that.
With Tchaikovsky next, salving his wounded spirit after his disastrous marriage, leaving the bitter St. Petersburg winter for Rome, enchanted by the music, inspired to write his Capriccio Italiano.
Thank you.
there's a final tarantella will keep any spiders away. Tchaikovsky's Capriccio Italiano, the BBC St. York's, conducted by Jerzy Bieloklawek. The performers like it, so does everybody else in the Royal Albert Hall. The flags are waving wildly. Well, just time, I think, before he comes on for a word from our first soloist tonight. It's Tchaikovsky again. Maxim Rizanov is a BBC New Generation artist. He's played Bach's solo cello suites at the Proms Chamber last year on viola. This is a tribute by Tchaikovsky to the earlier masters of the 18th century, particularly Mozart, who he adored as the god of music. And the Rococo variations, Maxim thinks, sound pretty wonderful on the viola.
I think the Rococo variations work for viola particularly well, if I compare it to any other arrangements done from cello to viola, because the whole piece has a sort of light mode to it. And I think sometimes on the cello it becomes a little bit too stressed, maybe, or heavy somehow. But on viola it's just brilliant because everything is much closer in the left hand. For example, the very last variation I take in the original position as it would be on the cello, but of course it sounds an octave higher. So an A string on viola would sound even brighter. I think it just works, full stop.
Well, you'll see and you'll hear in a moment the Rococo variations on viola with Maxim Rizanov. Susie Klein is with me in the box, just watching the orchestra re-establish itself into a Tchaikovskyan chamber form.
I have to say, I am hugely looking forward to this performance from Maxim Rizanov. He's a sensational performer. He's a musician, as you just heard, of incredibly keen intelligence. And he's just a sensational player. The way he draws you in is just wonderful. And I heard him in rehearsal today. I think it's going to be gorgeous, this arrangement.
Well, it's just, I mean, he does make the point, I think, that the viola, especially in the middle range, just sounds so beautiful, so seductive, doesn't it?
And I suppose the other thing is, again, it's one of the blueprints of the Proms season. We've had Jonathan Dove, which is new music, which is one of the things the Proms is all about. Another thing is about encouraging new, emerging young artists. He's a former Radio 3 new generation artist. So he's here as a kind of flag bearer for all those young people who've performed during the season as well.
And there have been lots of them. You've been to more Proms, presented more than I've had hot dinners, I think.
Well, I have been at a fair number, but I was trying to tot it up. I think I'm a part-timer by most of these promenade standards.
Well, here's young Maxim coming. You're in for a treat, really. Ex-BBC New Generation artist, and really one of the great musicians, never mind one of the great viola players of our time. Here to play Tchaikovsky, the Rococo variations, as transcribed by him from cello to viola. Variations on a Rokoko theme by Tchaikovsky, arranged by Maxim Rizanov for viola. Of course, it's written for cello and played by the fabulous Maxim Rizanov here at the last night of the proms at the BBC Symphony Orchestra and usually at Viola Klavek. I think the case is made, Susie, isn't it?
I never, ever want to hear that played with the cello ever again.
No, there's something just so beautiful and song-like about the viola playing it.
I think there's also something very particular about what we were mentioning before, which is his quality, his musical intelligence. This is Mozartian music. This is Tchaikovsky's take on Mozart. This is about classicism and elegance, not about schmaltz. And he delivered it beautifully.
Didn't he? A restrained brilliance, just the architecture coming back, of course, to take a well-earned bow. He said he was nervous about appearing at the last night of proms.
You couldn't tell.
No, could you not? I love the little red slash in his coat, you see. His mother's here too, by the way, from Ukraine. I met her earlier, so I'm sure she is as proud as Punch. I don't know where she is. I don't know whether I can spot a Ukrainian flag. There's just about every flag you could think of here.
I think you and I were having a competition to see which of us recognised the least number of flags. I think it was me. I must have missed that geography
class. There's an American flag over there, definitely. Danish, we've got Swedish.
New triumph for recognising the American flag.
You met somebody from Sweden who just turned up in the hope of getting in and got the last ticket.
A wonderful man called Christian who had never been to a prom in his life. I bumped into him earlier today. He happened to walk into the box office a couple of days ago, asked if he could get a ticket for the last night. They laughed him out of the building when somebody suddenly said, actually, I've got a ticket, my friend's ill. So here you go, he's at his first ever prom, and people would kill for that ticket.
Somewhere Christoph is there, wrapped to the Swedish flag. I hope he's enjoying himself. You can listen on extra high quality audio stream in tonight's live prom, extra because we've got high quality audio via FM and DAB, only available by your computer. Connect to a good hi-fi system or quality headphones. It's an experiment. Please do let us know if you try it, what you think. Apparently, it's fantastic. Are you a Twitterer? Because you're a Twitterer, apparently.
I'm lots of things. A Twitterer is not one of them. But Ruth, who is one of the very, very regular people at the absolute front of the arena every night, she was telling me that she tweeted earlier with her pictures. She was one of the people making the corsages, the carnations for the gentlemen of the orchestra. So there's pictures of her busily assembling carnations earlier. There's lots of Twitter stuff going on today.
Well, you can join in the last night excitement on Twitter. You include the hashtag BBC Proms in your tweet. You can also follow BBC Radio 3 Live on Twitter. I have to believe that. It's really like I'm like a Damascene figure. I just have to believe that this great thing happened somewhere out there in the ether. Oh, they're tuning, so I think we're about to get Parry. Last night, of course, is unthinkable without Jerusalem, but Parry's setting of Blake. No doubt the crowd will be raising the roof, but we hear now a work he wrote in 1887 for the Bach Choir, part of Queen Victoria's Silver Jubilee. Suitable text, of course, had to be chosen. It was Milton, a salute to the heavenly pair that are music and verse, and its blessed pair of sirens. And Parry, I think, was down the road at the Royal College of Music. He was director of the Royal College of Music, which, of course, just tumbled to down the foot of the steps here.
Well, Parry is one of those really interesting people, almost a forgotten figure, but the Proms is here every year to rescue the reputation.
sing an endless morn of lights. BBC singers and the symphony chorus and orchestra under Jerzy Belaprawek, and Blessed Care of Sirens by Parry, words by Milton. And just to think, less blessed pair we have in the box, I'm afraid, Susie and myself.
Speak for yourself.
Oh, yeah, no. The people are listening to this live in China, Australia, South Africa, the United States, right across Europe. It's just actually, it's very humbling to think the power that music has to unite.
And although one's eyes should be firmly fixed on the stage at all times, I always find it incredibly moving to see this hall packed full of people all here with a shared sense of community and communion. We were talking about Twitter before. I was vaguely sceptical that the promenaders particularly would be tweeters. And in fact, the sense of community between these people is just so very strong that they will find a way of getting together, however.
It's tangible. It's really tangible. Well, another treat coming up. We're about to hear the People's Diva, the fabulous Renée Fleming, looking and sounding great. She sings Smetana and Dvorak later and joins in the jollity of the Rule Britannia. But now the ravishing songs by Strauss that really her creamy voice is absolutely suited to so well. Verführung, Seduction, Freundliche Vision, Harmonious Vision, Ständchen, Serenade, Winterweihe, Winter Dedication, and Zweignung, Dedication. Now, these are songs, certainly Zweignung is one of the best known, five in all, and they're certainly not all well known, and that, I think, is one of the reasons why René chose them.
Three of them have not been sung at the proms before. Verführung is never done. It's really a monologue. That's the one that surprised me the most. It's a scene. And it's reminiscent of many of his opera scenes that he's written for the soprano voice. It's a large-scale piece. Freundliche Vision was very popular maybe 60, 70 years ago. And Winterweihe, very few people have sung at all, and it's probably my favorite. Somehow the message and the music go so well together.
Well, I think there's a huge sense of anticipation, isn't there? She is just one of the great voices. And listening to her in rehearsal this morning, my heart almost stopped.
The thing about Renée Fleming, she does that, have that very unusual combination of a supreme voice, as you said, just this creamy, delicious voice pours out of her. But she does have real star quality. Who knows what it is? She just stands on stage and people hold their breath listening to her. She's incredibly beautiful and seductive to look at. She makes this wonderful sound. And I met a woman earlier, Suzanne Gould, who had never listened to a note of classical music before, she said, until 3 years ago, she discovered Renée Fleming. She has followed her around the world. She's been to the Met in New York. She said it's a very expensive hobby, loving Renée Fleming.
Worth it. Well, here she comes. And, it's a sort of... she said to me the other day, I asked her what colour the dress was, and she said sort of purple, and she said, you describe it then. I can't. It's sort of regal purple, but it's got a sort of ruched... cinema curtain look to it. Sorry, I thought very complimentary. It's meant to be.
I think Vivian Westwood does marry Antoinette in purple and black. It's stunning.
Hey, the audience is gone already before she sings a note.
Thank you.
Wonderful René Fleming singing Strauss here at the last night of the Proms. Zweigmund dedication, the last one. Five songs altogether, I think, two or three have never been performed at the Proms before. Living up to expectation, I think, Susan, don't you?
I shouldn't be speechless because it's my job not to be, but I end up, every time I've ever heard René Fleming, being so wrapped up in a world, even when it's a very small song, she creates a whole world.
Yeah. I mean, even in that last Zweigmund, which is so short but so passionate, you know, to one who has redeemed me and shown me happiness, she does it, and she's done it for everybody in this hall.
And it's no mistake, I think, that she chooses Strauss, one of the great opera composers, that every song, even a tiny one, has this huge operatic dimension that she can really play with.
She's just come back, put her hands out to the audience, almost in benediction, as if she can't believe it. She must have got receptions like this before, but let's not forget, I think the answers should come to the Prom concert, say there was a very special atmosphere here. It's not just we're broadcasting everywhere and all over the world and here on Radio Free and television and the flags are waving. There is a real passion for music, and when demanded, an absolute silence and understanding, isn't there?
And I think there's a feeling, even as you said, somebody of René Fleming's stature, that this is an evening that matters. It's not just an end of term party. This is an important occasion to mark exceptional performance and exceptional stars of every kind of musical hue.
Well, our home crowd, I think, will be listening to as well, because this is going across the United States of America, so I hope they're all having a fantastic time. Cinemas in Canada, Australia, New Zealand and South Africa, and international television in China, which is live, Japan, Sweden. It is extraordinary, absolutely extraordinary.
And what those cinema goers will be getting, as we briefly alluded to, is this sensational dress. A figure-hugging, corset, floor-length number.
Go on,
with all the drama of a typical Vivienne Westwood dress, yeah. I'm just drooling with envy.
It's wonderful, Vivienne Westwood. She's a real original. I'm sorry I said it looked like cinema curtains earlier, but I meant ruched. You know, those old cinema curtains used to have wonderful draped silk curtains that went back. And you just knew that there was a huge amount of luxury went into the fabric.
I think you went to a smarter cinema than me.
I went to an old cinema. That's probably... they probably don't have those anymore. They're probably in the V&A, I suspect. You are going to go and mingle among your people, I gather, are you?
I hope very much to. I'm going to go back downstairs where people are having a good old knees up.
Now, do you know the Queen went and chatted to them when she was here?
Well, they'll have to make do with me this evening.
No,
sorry about
no
that.
No jewels on. I'm afraid Rennie's got jewels on, but I think we're going to see something spectacular in this second half when she comes back. But she will be back with Smetana, Dvorak, and I'm glad to say she is joining in the Arne in Royal Britannia. We have had people before who didn't want to do it, but Rennie isn't made of that sort of stuff. Well, we're back in the Royal Albert Hall about to begin the party, this last party, the last night of the Proms. Down in the arena is Susie Klein somewhere.
Thanks very much indeed, Sean. We're being sprayed with party poppers down here. Now, every night on the Proms, those of you who listen on the wireless will know that there is a small rumpus in the arena every night and a bit of chanting. Michael is going to explain to us what it's all about. What are you chanting about?
Every night we want to tell the people in the hall how much the charity collection has raised up to that point. Basically, hopefully, to encourage them to give some more.
Well, it is the last night. Could we now have a bit of a chant to reveal the final? Let's see how much you've raised this season.
Yes, certainly. Well, do you like us to do it now?
Off we go.
Okay. Right, ladies and gentlemen, can we have a shush, please? A big one. One. 4.
Arena 2, audience. Promenaders will be collecting for musical charities after the concert. So far, you have donated over £86,000. Thank you.
Bravo. So that's what it's all about.
I'm so delighted to finally find out after all those nights, 75 nights of you lot being spoken over by us broadcasters. Delighted you've had your moment in the sun. Now, Sheila, you are the current chairman of the Promenaders Musical Charities. Who are you collecting for and why?
We're collecting for the Musicians Benevolent Fund, which is actually a bursary for a young musician, the Click Sergeant charity, and we sponsor two music therapists in two different hospitals, and the Ottokar Kraus Music Trust, which trains, for a change, different aspect, it trains the parents and the teachers in music therapy.
Fantastic stuff. Well, very worthwhile stuff going on here. David, you're a trustee. I want to know, what makes you keep coming back to the Proms? What is so special? Why spend your whole summer here?
Oh, dear. Just a great combination of music. Also, there's a completely different social side here actually to anything else, and there is the charity collection. People have met long life friends and partners and so on here. So,
well, long may they continue to do so. Very well done to all of you. A fantastic sunraise. Have a great evening. Back to you, Sean.
Thank you, Susie. You look very nice down there among all those colourful people. Everyone is dressed up. Ah, now we have Malcolm Bennett and David Gabby putting a chaplet, a great laurel wreath around the bust of Sir Henry Wood, to whom thanks for beginning this wondrous festival all those years ago. They're polishing the top of his head. Very nice of them, because he does belong to the Royal Academy of Music. We're very grateful that he's allowed to live and reign here for the duration of the Proms before he goes back to the Royal Academy and Duke's Hall. So there is Sir Henry, looking very proud, pleased as punch as well he might. He wanted to make the best music available to the biggest possible audience, and it does exactly that at the Proms every year. Jerzy Belaklavik will be back, because the party's about to begin in earnest. A touch of creative raucousness, I'm afraid, even in the safety of your own home, to get us in the mood. First musical offering, a little unbridled, it's Chabrier's Joyous March, and he did say it was idiotically comical. Jerzy has got balloons and festoons. I think he's got the idea. He's got his baton too, of course.
We'll be right back.
Well, there you are. It's the beginning of the second half, the anything can happen half of the last night of the BBC prom. More flags have appeared, more people dressed up, more balloons. That was the Joyeuse March by Chabiré, BBC Symphony Orchestra, and Jerzy Belaklavek. I never understood why it's not the March Joyeuse, but it is called Joyeuse March. And my joyous companion has transmogrified back up from the pit up to our little balcony.
I've been
nice
doing
to see
a
you.
Little spot of flags.
Oh, yes,
well,
here's
we'll
Renée coming back. Renée Fleming is going to sing, I can tell you, her signature piece, Dvorak's Song of the Moon from Rusalka. The nymph who falls in love with the mortal and flees to the moon. And also Smetana's opera Dalibor first, and I know she's going to introduce it. All I can tell you is it's about a knight who held an uprising about brewing rights, honestly.
Okay, it's everything everybody said it would be. I can only say when I walked out tonight, I thought, I'm so glad I dressed up. Wow. You're so beautiful. I'm thrilled to be here. I just wanted to say on this particular day, as an American, I'm so grateful for your support. You're all so wonderful. Thank you. Thank you. Maestro Belhalovic and I had the great fortune almost a year ago to celebrate the commemoration of the Velvet Revolution in the Czech Republic with these two arias. And Dalibor is about heroism. Milada, like our character in Fidelio, is dressed as a man to go into prison and save the man she loves. Rusalka is dressed as a water nymph to go into town and get the prince she wants. And because it's opera, both pieces end so badly, they all die terrible deaths. So, but that's why we love it. I did one happy ending once and got letters of disappointment. So, oh, so exciting.
Thank you.
Well, I know she sings Rusalka frequently, the opera by Dvorak, but that song for the moon was pretty special. Here's someone coming to give her a prize. David Hemingway has been coming to the Proms since 1984. He's making a presentation, if he can get in there, to René Fleming. Do you think he's the guy who shouted, "I love you," earlier on?
Well, I do know that many of René Fleming's fan club, they're called the Beautiful Boys. Many of them are here in attendance tonight.
I thought you said the Beautiful Boys for a minute. Did it have to be René?
voice.
Well, she's having a rapturous applause. It was very nice to hear her say something, actually, and she really meant it, I think, when she said, "It's as good as I heard it would be." There's something with this audience that pushes people a notch up. I noticed at the beginning of the Proms in Meistersinger and all those, that first fabulous weekend, Simon Boccanegra with Domingo, Mahler, it just raises everyone's game. I thought it was something very special.
And I have to say, after that opening weekend, I was slightly afeared that the Proms team had set the bar a little high, because how do you then have a whole season of concerts that culminates in this?
Well, the whole season has been, of course, absolutely extraordinary, but that was worth it for that first weekend alone, with Bryn Terfel and Christopher Purvis and Placido Domingo.
Nowhere else could you get all of that for £12.50. No, I thought it was the best value thing you could have bought yourself as a present all year, that opening
That would
weekend.
Have been the perfect present. Well, the party poppers are just starting to go gently. We're not quite into the party spirit yet. Young Maxim Risenov's coming back, who played the Tchaikovsky Rococo Variation so fabulously earlier. And he's playing a couple of pieces, the Prelude and the Gallop, for a suite for viola and small orchestra by Vaughan Williams. I have to say, I didn't know at all. It was written for Lionel Tertius. And Maxim said he couldn't find recordings of it anywhere. And, I mean, the music is available, obviously, but nobody really performs it.
Well, we've talked already a little bit about this sense of the last night of the Proms having those little traces of the DNA of what this is all about this season. Parry, Vaughan Williams, a huge number of English composers so neglected for so long, and what the Proms has done hugely is reinstate their music, let us discover it.
Well, Vaughan Williams did struggle. He did finish at the end, I think, but he wrote a song that's not finished, and I don't know if it ever will be. It was, we're getting just two movements, a prelude and a mad gallop. Well, it's an extraordinary pair of movements from Vaughan Williams' Suite for Viola and Small Orchestra, a prelude and a gallop. Oh, here's another presentation. Enona Cox is coming up to give something to Maxine. It's a lovely silver paper. I wonder what's in it. It's not a bottle, definitely. She trained as a singer. She's married to a fellow promenader, Lawrence. I think, Susie, you'd need to be if you come to everything here. This would need to be almost a way of life. I think it is for some people.
Yes, it's either that or divorce. But genuinely, so many people I've met over the years, I started promenading as a season ticket holder when I was a teenager. So many people I know have got together in the proms queue. So there you go, great advice for singles
yes.
out there.
We're getting more Wagner now, of course, talked about Meistersinger, which you presented at the beginning of the summer and I came to, which was Welsh National Opera, which is simply knockout.
Can you remember all those weeks and months ago? It does feel like an awful
it
lot of
does.
Water has passed under
like
the bridge since then.
Another life. Well, we're getting Lohengrin now, another one of his great pieces. It's the bridal chorus. Everyone knows this. Actually, the number of people who've marched up or down the aisle for this, I should think, must be legion. But if brides knew what happened in the operatic context, they mightn't be quite so amused. But, of course, Elsa and the great saviour knight who has come are about to get married. But she simply cannot keep her mouth shut and is pushed into asking what his name is, the one thing she's not supposed to. And so off he goes, and the wedding never happens.
Well, Renee Fleming alluded to it earlier. Most people in opera don't end up happy. It's not always a good ending.
No, but he does, I suppose. He sails off on a swan, so I mean, that can't be too bad. How many people know, get a swan to come and collect them when things go wrong?
I'm lucky if I can manage to make it to the bus stop.
Well, that's what it is if you're a knight of the Holy Grail, of course, like Lohengrin is. But we don't meet Lohengrin, or indeed the lovely Elsa here. We have the bridal chorus, so you can pretend it's all terribly, terribly happy, even though we know it's going to end rather miserably. We're just waiting for Jerzy Bielaklawik to come back to conduct the BBC Singers and the BBC Symphony Chorus, who are together tonight with the BBC Symphony Orchestra, live here at the Royal Albert Hall on the last night of this fabulous season that has been BBC Proms 2010.
Thank you.
the bridal chorus from Lohengrin by Wagner, the BBC Singers, the BBC Symphony Chorus, the BBC Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Jerzy Bielaklawek, and the chorus director of the Symphony Chorus is Stephen Jackson. Wonderful sound. Gosh, weren't they just pingingly on the notes?
It was absolutely beautiful, but I did sit there thinking, if only every husband and wife knew what was to come after that fateful moment of bliss.
Well, we wish everyone well. If you're marching down the aisle, please continue to do so. I think we just need to have a little warning in case Jerzy comes back rather quickly, because it is, well, it's 50 years since the death of Oscar Hammerstein, half the partnership with Richard Rodgers, and the hall is going to sing, and all the proms in the park are going to sing, and I hope you're going to sing at home. Turn the volume up, go mad, it's You'll Never Walk Alone from Carousel, and Jerzy is going to, I think, to call out to the halls and everyone around the country to make sure they're, I think, ready and on form.
And this, of course, the kind of payoff for the Rodgers and Hammerstein night that John Wilson and his orchestra gave
incredible
earlier in the season. That, a follow-up to their sensational MGM prom last year. It's part of this broadening ever wider and wider that the proms goes for every year now.
So, are you ready? Jerzy may not ring you at home, but he's calling out to everyone else. I can hear you. We're listening.
Good evening, everybody. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen here. It's wonderful view, it's wonderful picture here, and the atmosphere is excellent. I am very happy. I would like to, on your behalf, to greet and to say good evening to you all here in Albert Hall, Royal Albert Hall. Everybody who is listening to radio or TV or online all over the world, and of course also our brothers' venues, proms, last night proms in parks. And because we would like to establish a direct contact with the crowds in parks, we have devised such a sort of out of voice ping pong, and we would like to try whether this will work. I would like to ask you that we will call to the parks, hello parks, and the crowd in parks. I would like to ask to respond to our calls with hello hall. So let's please try. Let us please try now, first of all, the people from Northern Ireland who are gathered in Hillsborough Castle. So please say with me, hello Hillsborough. Hello Hillsborough. Next is Kurt Hall Dundee in Scotland. Hello, Dundee! Then there is Buell Hill Park in Salford. We will say hello, Salford. Hello! And Singleton Park, Swansea in Wales. Hello, Swansea! And finally, the crowd here across the street in Hyde Park. Hello, the Hyde Park! The ping pong has worked very well. Earlier in this year's season, prom seasons, there was a wonderful Rodgers and Hammerstein prom. And from that came the idea that we would now try to create probably the biggest, the largest choir in the world, with you, with all people in parks and probably all listeners around the world. And we will sing all together their classic You'll Never Walk Alone. So please join.
Was quite something. I'm rather overcome now, trying to sing along as well. How many thousands of people do you think were singing, Susie?
Well, there are 6,000 or servers here, 30,000 across the road, plus all the other parts.
10,000, 6,000. I hope everybody at home was singing. I really hope so. Gosh, we're going straight into a little hornpipe, but not the one you know.
I was told that you like to clap to this, and I didn't hear anything, so probably we have to repeat it with your clapping, huh?
Yes, the Brommers can both clap and bob at the same time. Multi-skilling. Fantastic. What's your vicious hornpipe? From the movie, isn't it? From Pirates of the Caribbean?
It is actually, yeah, a traditional hornpipe. The arrangement made by Nick Rain, but it did absolutely feature in Dead Man's Chest, of the Pirates of the Caribbean series.
My God, Rennie's here. Look, she's wearing a hat. I hope there are no Danes in the audience because we're going to celebrate Alfred's victory over them. Oh, she's got an extraordinary hat. Is that a Vivian Westwood hat?
It is indeed.
It's going to be Royal Britannia, I think. That's not her note.
Thank you.
may be an old chestnut, but it's a wonderful piece, and my goodness, it brings everyone to their feet and their voices absolutely to double forte. The crowd is going absolutely mad. I see all sorts of diverse people, more and more flags. Rennie with her hat and her very, very tiny American flag is now making her exit with her very long train.
Yes, in addition to the gorgeousness that she sported earlier, we now have an enormous, voluptuous train, the Bismarck.
Well, she's gone, but I think, yes, Jerzy is staying, so I think we are going to have Paris, orchestrated by Elgar, and it is Jerusalem, but maybe he's going to say something first. No, I think it's straight on. Well, Jerusalem, Paris orchestrated by Elgar, an absolute staple diet with last night of the proms. I think Jerzy is going to get a little presentation from the promos. Yes, she's just been given his package from Maggie Greenstock, who started the prom in 1987. She's in the arena almost every night. Well, he's going to three cheers for Sir Henry in a moment.
That was lovely. You have a nice voices. Well done. I just would like at this moment to thank and say congratulations to thousands of artists who have taken part in this season, and of course especially my dear colleagues from tonight, the magnificent René Fleming and the and equally brilliant Maxim Ryshanov. And of course, big thanks deserve the resident ensembles of proms, which are the BBC Singers. BBC Symphony Chorus. And BBC Symphony Orchestra. But nothing of this all would happen had it not been for Sir Henry Wood. He was the founder conductor back into 1895, and his bust presides here on stage, and he is looking with a stern eye to us and controlling us every night. But I think that he could be probably really happy if he would see how his vision to bring classic music to broadest possible audience has become reality, and then his festival is flourishing up now to days. And this is, I think we need. So I would like now to invite you to join me with the traditional three hip hip hurrah to cheers to Sir Henry Wood. Hip hip hurrah! Hooray! Hip hip
hooray!
Hip hip
hooray!
Thank you. It has been a record year for proms audiences. I think that the official statistic will be counted later, but we know now that it was one of the most successful proms season. And I would like, and we all would like to thank you, audiences, for your continuous support and interest, and especially, of course, our promers, who are who are most incredible audience and very attentive and wonderful. Yeah. And not only that, but you are excellent with your support and with your efforts by collecting money for the musical charities. In this year, the amount has reached £86,700. And it might still rise tonight, for instance. And so I would like to finish just with one thought that actually the music for us all is something which even in difficult times, or I would say actually especially in difficult times, is the safe haven for all of us, is our support, is giving us consolation, is giving us inspiration. And I think that the fact that these big audiences were coming this year to proms underlines this idea. And I would say that it's hardly any other proof how important music for the life of people is, and how strong ability it has bringing people together. It was now today this our ping pong was one of example. So So let me finish with the look forward into the 2011. I will be back here with my orchestra on July 15th to open 117th season of Proms, and I hope you will join all of us, all of you. You will join us, and we are looking forward to it very much.
Thank you.
Well, at the first performance of the Proms in 1901 of Elgar's Pomp and Sex March No. 1, the audience rose and yelled. They're still doing it. Will it have the desired effect? There you are, Perseverance gets a reprise. Another verse of Pomp and Circumstance March No. 1. It's extraordinary. This whole hall actually was just humming with sound.
People stomping their feet, people bobbing up and down. So many flags I can hardly see over the person in front of his shoulder. Everybody just going crazy here.
I mean, there are more flags and more. I mean, that's a great thing, is to see the variety of flags in all nations. All colours, shapes and religious sizes of people are here tonight. And, you know, this may be sound like an old imperial hymn, but it gets everybody together, and there's a fantastic cathartic experience in singing together and being part of this. We'll be going shortly, but not yet. The national anthem was arranged by Benjamin Britten. Apparently when it opened Snape Maltings in 1967, the Queen was very affected. And as she said, I had heard it once or twice. Well, the national anthem is arranged by Benjamin Britten. Choir singing beautifully, and then us all joining in. It means it's the end of another prom season.
I know, I can't quite believe that we're at number 76.
76 not out. It's been a sensational season. I think, as Yuji was saying, in times of fiscal darkness and peculiarity, people maybe rediscover the things that really make us happy.
And a testament to what this season means, that it's a combination of incredibly moving musical experience, a good old knees up, a great end of term party.
Well, isn't it? I think people have got to let off steam, especially the promers who've been coming here so often and paying so much attention. There's nothing like it anywhere else. We're going to have to hold hands in a minute, you know. It's like a Scottish tradition. You hold hands and sing Auld Lang Syne.
I've been waiting for this all evening.
So, good night from us. Thank you for being with us. It's been wonderful.
And we look forward to seeing you next prom season.
Indeed. So it's going to be Auld Lang Syne. If you feel like joining in at home, please do. We've had a wonderful season. There's been marvellous music. This has been a fantastic night, as ever. So it definitely is good night from us. Good night.
Good night. A very good evening to you all.
Night of the Proms 2010, which took place, of course, at the Royal Albert Hall in London in September. It was presented by Sean Rafferty with Susie Klein. Well, after the chimes of Big Ben to welcome in the new year, we'll be joining Marianne Kennedy for a Hogmanay edition of World on Three, recorded in the Western Highlands, with guests from all over Scotland and from south of the border too. That's in just a minute. It's 12 midnight. From me, John Shea, tonight's studio manager, Nasser Pervaiz, and all of us at BBC Radio 3, a very happy new year.
Welcome to the rapidly defrosting Highlands and to the studio here in Ardgour, where we have a bit of a ceilidh going on to welcome in the new year. This is Marianne Kennedy and World on Three, and warmer it might be out here, it's still far too cold to be outside. So why don't you come on in with me and my two tall, dark and handsome pipers from the Battlefield Band.
Thank you.
Thanks very much indeed, guys. It's not often I get to make an entrance with quite such style into the studio. Welcome to Ardgour for this Ceilidh to bring in the new year. We've got some folks round and some very special guests in the form of the Staves, a wonderful trio of singing sisters, and I'm also expecting our modern-day national bard, Mr. Michael Mara. And, of course, as you heard there, one of the seminal bands of Scottish traditional music, the Battlefield Band. You heard Mike and Ewan from the band piping me in there, so let's get Sean and Alistair to join them for the opening salvo of the Ceilidh. And the set is, I hope this is not a personal comment, it's the Pits. Thank you. fantastic stuff here from the Battlefield Band. Now, up in Scotland here, we do New Year big style. We've even got an old New Year and a new New Year. And, of course, it's customary up here in Scotland to go first footing. The first people to arrive at the door, and tonight is no exception. And...
Hello, Marianne.
Mr. Michael Mara.
Happy New Year to you.
Shall we get a couple of songs from you?
Okay, I dare say.
Yeah. Well, we shan't make you do it straight away.
Okay.
But we do have lined up a trio that I know that you're going to absolutely love. These are The Staves, Three Sisters. Do you fancy having a wee listen?
Oh, I do.
Come on in.
Yes.
Look at my compact first foot. My boy! So we'll carry on with the music just now, and please welcome The Staves. That was The Staves, the Staveley Taylor girls, Emily, Jessica
and Camilla, and I first met them up here in Ardgour when they were out touring with Mount Desolation, and I just fell in love with the voices then, so it's really lovely to have you back here. And it's nice to see that you behave like families do. The two older sisters said the baby could do the interview. Nice. Bullying. But since you were up in the autumn, there's been a whole lot happening for the band, hasn't there? It's been quite a busy end of year for you.
Yeah, it's been really, really busy. We've been doing lots of gigging, lots of writing, trying to write our album, really, and planning on having it ready to do in the summer, which we're really excited about.
Is this something that you've done always, singing together like this?
Yeah, we've always sung together. I mean, we haven't really been classically trained or anything, but we always used to sing around the house doing the washing up or anything. Sounds a bit sickly, that, doesn't it? Von Trapp family. But no, yeah, just always listen to music and sung.
It's such a sweet sound. Is it always completely harmonious between the three of you?
I mean, we hate each other. We can't stand each other.
It's a nightmare.
It's a complete nightmare. No, it's good. It's good that we can argue, and it's all right. I think you only get that with family, and you can argue, and then
you can be really mean.
Yeah, really mean, and then 5 minutes later, it's okay.
Well, we're really glad you're here. Would you give us another couple of songs?
Yes, of course.
Tell me about this next one.
This next one is called Facing West, is that what we're doing? Yeah. And it's quite an old song, but it was the first song I wrote on the ukulele. So it's got a place in our hearts.
And it's sitting on your lap.
Sitting on my lap at the moment.
Very sweet. All right, let's have it then. The Staves. With the window.
coughing and a tune up.
So this next one is called Mexico.
That's true.
Yes, that's true. And it's on our EP that we have for sale at the moment. Only through our MySpace though, old fashioned, you don't download.